Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, and today I am bringing you the best and the best of the worst moments from 90 Day Fiancé, Before the 90 Days, Unexpected, and Married at First Sight. But first, no, I'm not going to barrage you with social media stuff. I have some fun news to share with you. If you are in the LA area, I will be in Irvine next week, August 31st through the 2nd, to meet up with Troy from Taste of Reality and Danny Pellegrino of Everything Iconic, as well as some other fans of Real Housewives of Orange County and fans of Troy and Danny, of course. We are going to attack the ropes course that Tamra, Vicky, and Shannon did on Real Housewives. Yeah, I am going to be bringing the true Chicago Vicky woohoo to the course. So here is the thing. If you want to go, you can actually go too. I'll put a little link in the show notes. If you want to go and watch, it's only $3. You can probably have a very good laugh because I will be up there and I am not in tip-top shape like Tamra. And if you actually want to climb the course, I think you can. It's like $20. Check the details and link just to be sure, but I would love to see you out there. Also, if you want to meet me for drinks or perhaps a charcuterie, please let me know. I'm thinking Friday night, August 31st, something just very casual, hang out at the hotel bar or something. I have details in the Orchard of a Snark Facebook group, or send me a message and I will send you details. Please don't be shy. Don't leave me stranded like Ricky, alone for hours waiting for someone to arrive. So send me a message or look for the details, like I said, in the Facebook group or Twitter and Instagram at RealityTVPod. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/RealityTVPod. You guys, it is what keeps this podcast here running, and there's different levels of bonus content, different perks, starting at just $1 a month. I am not too proud to beg, so please head on over there and support the show. Okay, now can we get into 90 Day Fiancé? Here we go. Now, you know, we got to start off with Angela and Michael because they were, well, you know what? All of them were crown jewels this week. But I mean, Angela is just a gift from reality TV heaven. That be your hashtag selfie shirt. You know, I thought that was like, oh my God, what a great saying. But if you were able to look beyond and under the mountain of words, it continued and it said, be your hashtag selfie, everyone else is taken. Well, I mean, if that is not the new slogan for 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days, I don't know what is. Angela is just sweating much like I sweat every day of my life because, listen, I'm not a thin girl. I carry a lot of extra padding around, extra warmth. You know, it does get cold in Chicago. So I understand the sweating issue. But I gotta tell you, I never had pit stains like Angela. That is out of control. I hear Botox can take care of that, little Botox in the armpits. I don't know. But I do know that if you are from a warm climate like Angela is, you know to pack some extra deodorant, maybe pack an extra shirt to change into, even some dry deodorant spray. And a little tip from me, yeah, didn't know you were going to get this one today. In a pinch, use some dry shampoo, right? Those of us with larger bosoms, if you get a little, you know, the under boob sweat, sorry guys if there's any listening, in a pinch, if you need a little freshening up, dry shampoo can do the trick. And nothing expensive here. I mean, go and grab yourself a $2 Suave or whatever. All I'm trying to say is that Angela had options and she did not use them. Now, poor Michael, well, literally poor Michael, he is oh God, he doesn't know what's about to hit him, literally what's about to hit him, right? He is saying this is the first white woman he's ever been with. And man, she's going to leave an impression, right? Michael's at the airport. I'm just going to jump right to it, right? So Michael's at the airport waiting for her outside. She's got some sort of guide helping her through the airport. Thank God. She sees Michael. She drops her bags and runs to him and says, I just had to run to him because he's my sexy Nigerian baby. Angela, I didn't even know what to think. I don't even know where to start with this, actually. Let's just start with the bags. You drop your bags in the middle of an outdoor terminal in Nigeria. You don't even leave your bag unattended in an elementary school anymore. And here she is just dumping her bags. It was very Darcy and Jesse Von Trapp, just the, you know, they saw it in the movies and they just throw it down. Well, yeah, we're not in the 80s anymore. You can't be doing that shit. So the bags pissed me off because what, we're all supposed to just walk around it? Ugh. Okay, so the bags she dropped and then she goes to hug him and she is sweating all over her hashtag selfie shirt and she's sweating all over Michael. Gross. Save that shit for the bedroom later because, you know, she worked up a good sweat then. I felt bad for him, which surprised me because you guys know I'm a very cynical bitch and I thought he was just going to be taking her for a ride. Oh God, see, all these things are just leading back to very Angela-ish jokes. Okay, she took him for a ride. Maybe he did take her for a ride, if you know what I mean. Ooh, my coffee's kicking in and I got a lot to say. Well, let's get to the comment that is got Twitter all abuzz and is comparing Asin and Nicole to Michael and Angela. And that is the stature quote. Now, I am not the best at impressions, especially when we are talking about other cultures. Gets a little iffy there. But this is what he said without a great accent. Her stature is kind of bigger than I expected, and she looks older than I expected. But it's okay. I'm happy. Not for nothing, the guy's got manners, right? It's the sweetest possible way to say she looks nothing like her pictures. She is a huge fat ass because you know that's what he's thinking. I'm not saying it. Yes, she is a larger woman, but she owns it. And I wish I had her confidence. Now, Angela wishes she had her hands all over Michael. She can't even contain herself. She starts saying, come on, Michael, let's go. And all Michael can do as he's getting manhandled is, oh, Angela, you're crazy. I mean, if he had only an idea what was about to hit him later. Now, Angela is thinking that Michael makes her feel so appreciated. She's never felt as loved. And then we hear Michael explaining his feelings. And he says, quote, she's loud. I try to give her a sign, like be quiet. Oh, nothing says appreciation like be quiet. Now, then there's a little moment that I just loved because it shows just how slow Angela is on the uptake. And that's when Michael says all of the people in the streets, they're street hawkers, which I thought was a really good translation. I mean, for a guy that English is not his first language, I was really impressed. Like, okay, he's got some American lingo. He understands, you know, just turn of phrases. But who didn't understand? The freaking American. Angela couldn't even understand him. I don't think she's ever heard the word street hawker because she thinks he's saying hooker. And then even when he spells it out, he goes H-A-W-K-E-R. She's like, oh, a street hawker. Oh, God damn it, Angela. I mean, my God. Moving forward, it's going to get political here for a second. I'm going to try to take myself out of it. You guys know I'm a liberal. There's no hiding it. So when she took that MAGA hat out and Michael puts it on, every fiber of my being was, cringing is not even the word for it. I'm just going to leave it at that. Let's all agree to disagree if we're all on different pages. But that scene was, oh, it was tough to watch. Now then, Angela just, I mean, I think assault is really the only word for it, because she lumbers over and just throws her entire body weight on top of Michael. You got to give your partner a safe word or something if you're about to do that stuff. There's no way, even if he wanted to tap out, he could do that. I mean, I think all of the oxygen in his lungs were just pushed out as if he was like a CPR doll, whatever that guy's name is. What the hell is that thing's name? Okay, we got to find out. Anyway, she just wants him to take his clothes off. She says, I'm going to Trump you up. Even if you're a Trump fan, I'm sorry, that's got to scare the fucking shit out of you. You know, Michael was scared because he's smiling. I think much like all of us do, we smile when we're uncomfortable. You smile through the pain. And he says, this energy of hers, she's just so masculine, like agile. Well, I guess he's seen things we have not. I don't think agile would be the first word that comes to mind. But again, the man has been through a lot. He has seen things. Now, fast forward to the next morning, Angela is like a whole new woman, and Michael is, I don't know if it's like Stockholm Syndrome, or he's just in the middle of a trauma, or perhaps he likes it. I don't know. But they're going to Michael's mom's house, and he is very worried about what his mom is going to think of her. He knows that she is going to check her out head to toe, as any good mother should. And he wants her to, quote, look more sweet, not so old. I'm really not trying to say quote and then give you a quote so many times, but the things he said were just so perfectly spoken. I feel like I owe it to him to quote him properly. What surprised me is that Angela was not really truly offended by this comment. She just kind of looked at him and gave him the side eye like, oh, you're so bad. I would have wanted to throw a punch, if I'm going to be honest, but Angela's just going with the flow and she is not quite ready to meet the family, meet the entire village, because she knows that she is going to be the first white woman to go to this neighborhood. And she's wondering, is it because I am the first white woman? Is it because I'm white? Because I'm old? Well, I'm going to take a wild shot in the dark and say it's both, plus the fact that she had these huge hoops hanging off of her ears. I mean, the kids alone in any neighborhood would be excited to see those things rolling down the street, because it looks like a, I don't know, like a fun game, throw something through the old lady's hoops. Okay, maybe it's because she's old and white, but also something with the hoops. Okay, well, let's move on to John and Rachel. I can sympathize with Rachel a lot because, much like myself right now, recovering from a cold, I think she was too. She's got a lot of nasal congestion going on. It works for her. She's got a great singing voice. Doesn't quite work for me. So I apologize as you're listening to this and you're saying, God damn it, Jody, blow your nose. Trust me, it has been blown. It has been sprayed with many sprays of Flonase. I am Zyrtec'd up. I have exhausted all the DayQuil and NyQuil I can, but this is where we are. Let's just get to London with John and Rachel now. John, I gotta tell you, he's winning me over. I have some questions about him. I think it's very scary that he has physically hurt people. But I mean, just look at him. He is like a little British teapot. He's a little squat man. He smiles like he's very confused. He's got a little baby face. And since I know Dave doesn't listen to this, my husband Dave, if you're a new listener, he actually turned to me halfway through this episode and said, do you think he's good looking? To which, of course, I questioned back, do you think he's good looking? And he didn't want to answer. So I think little John, my little teapot, I think my husband has a little man crush on him. I get it. He's got a little baby face. He's very into Rachel. But again, there is some things standing out to me that are a little scary. First is that he kept grabbing the stroller. Now, I'm going to call it a pram because that's what they call it over there, and it sounds very fancy, and I've always wanted to call it a pram. So he keeps grabbing the pram as they're rolling down the street. I don't like that. It was very invading space or trying to take control. I would not have appreciated or enjoyed that at all when my kids were in a stroller, and if I was just going down the street and Dave would just go over and just grab it in front of me. It's very, I don't know. I don't like it. Another thing that makes me question John is that I think he's being more honest to the camera than he is to Rachel. He says she looks different than he expected. He says that it's more complicated having a baby around than he thought. However, he's not quite saying these things to Rachel. I get it. He's supposed to be winning her over. It's supposed to be the first time they're seeing each other. Now let's put a pause here. There have been some incredible sleuths on Reddit. I am not on Reddit. I tried. I just can't figure it out. But people have been tweeting me things that they've seen and so on. And it's pretty much all but confirmed that John and Rachel did meet up together and that Lucy is his baby. Again, are we really ever going to know this? Absolutely for sure, unless we hear from them? No. But things that he is saying does make sense that they would have met together. For example, when he said she looks different, it could be because last time he saw Rachel, she did look different because she hadn't been pregnant yet. She said herself she is still losing the baby weight. I'm not going to diss her for that. All of us mothers have been there. So that's one thing. And the other thing, when he said it's a lot more complicated than I thought, it seems like from the get-go, he knows that this is his daughter. It's more complicated, perhaps in the way that he thought he was going to instantly bond with this baby. And here Lucy is in his lap, losing her shit, screaming, crying, and they are not instantly bonded because it's really his baby. Just a thought, just a theory. Now, these two also make me wonder, not only because of all of that, but also because Rachel is not really trying to look her best. I'm going to preface this in saying, I understand everyone looks like shit after a lot of traveling, long flights, long drives, a small baby. I actually think she is very pretty. But if you're going to be seeing a guy for the first time that you have been talking to for months or years, I find it very hard to believe you're just going to lay down in bed in an old ratty t-shirt and just lay there and be like, no, whatever. Oh, you're going to go check on the baby. Something doesn't seem right. Something that is oh so right to me is John's mom. I think I just said John. That's very not Jody's voice. Maybe this cold is making me lose my Chicago accent. Ooh, fingers crossed. Okay, so John's mother, Jackie. Oh, our voice of reason. But here's the thing why I love her so much. She spells her name J-A-C-Q-U-I. Now, I know that's spelled Jackie. I'm not going to diss it. I actually freaking love it. But I am now going to call her Jacquie because I can. And phonetically, I think that's how you would say it. So Jacquie thinks that John and Rachel are a little bit mental. And then she asks him if he had a good journey. And she tells us that he's been quite fickle in the past. I mean, if she's not right up there with Mary Berry now from the Great British Bake Off, I don't know where else she'd be except right in the center of my little cold black heart. So these two, okay, it's really hard with the new baby, blah, blah, blah. I didn't understand why after he lit the candles and they're about to get it on, he lays down and then all of a sudden he jumps up as if he has ADD or something. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go check on Lucy. No, 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 no. Any parent will tell you if that baby is quiet, you never, ever go and open that door and tiptoe and check in their room. That's like rule number one of parenting. If you don't have any kids, if you're currently expecting, write that down in your diary right now. Put it on the calendar. Put a note or a post-it on your baby's door right now. Do not go in if it's quiet. But no, John goes in, fucks it up. The baby starts screaming and gee, I wonder what's going to happen. Okay, so let's move on from these guys and let's get to Ricky and Melissa because once again, this episode was incredible. Another great setup by these 90-day producers. So Ricky is sitting there waiting at the restaurant still, like he's been there for 3 weeks now. And he says that it really pisses him off when people are late like this. Well, to that I say, then frickin' leave. If this is supposed to be your soon-to-be wife and soon-to-be stepmother to your two children, and her first impression is pissing you off, and she hasn't even walked in, I think it's time to wrap it up and go home and cut your losses. But no, he just keeps sitting there. And the more he sits there, the longer he sits there, the more he's falling in love with her. And his cutoff time keeps moving. First, he says his cutoff is between 9 and 9:15. Remember, this was a 7 p.m. date. So this chick is now 2 hours late plus. Now then, that timeline changes a little bit. And this is where you have to wonder, what are producers saying to him in between these takes? Like, okay, man, you got to wait it out. Oh, hey, Ricky, let's wait a little longer because that 9 to 9:15 cutoff time moved to, 10 o'clock because he said, well, you know, 9:15, she could potentially get here at 10. And then they quickly pan to the doorway and then a huge dude walks in. Oh, God, the editing, bravo. And then a text comes in, little doo-doo-doo, and we see, I'm on my way, see? And then the producers are like, oh, great, she's on her way. Well, what does she look like? And Ricky's like, well, she didn't take a picture of her. It's just the inside of the taxi. It's just the taxi. Ooh, maybe I'm just looking too deep into it. No, Ricky, no, you're not looking deep enough into it. So 9:44, he gets a text and she says, I'm here. I'm just paying the taxi. Ooh, pulse music. We're waiting. We're waiting. And then she walks in. Yeah, Melissa. Now, my husband did say, I think that's a dude. I don't think it is. I know there's been a lot of talk about that. I don't think Melissa is a guy or anything like that. But I do think she was hiding something. And what was it? Oh, yeah, all together right now. Orthodontia. Yeah, braces for the motherfucking win. I knew it. We can never go a season of any show on TLC without someone with braces. And I mean, adult braces. And the fact that Ricky didn't even know, I think he was bothered by it, by the way, just a little bit. He says he wasn't, but clearly he noticed it because he brought it up. What I'm finding about Ricky, actually, is that he brings a lot of things up, almost too much stuff, because the conversation went from fairly cordial. You could tell Melissa was uncomfortable. I don't know if it was because she was uncomfortable about the braces or if she was uncomfortable around Ricky, but she does ask him, hey, do you want to go dancing? And this is where Ricky says too much. He says, no, I can't. It's because my mom told me that I suck at dancing and I'm a bad dancer. So now I don't dance because I'm self-conscious. No, Ricky, don't go just listing your insecurities on a first date. But he keeps going because then they talk about horseback riding. No, no horseback riding because he feels bad for the horse, the little horse. Oh, I'm sorry. He makes like a little cry face. He feels bad for him. Oh, and also because he's too fat. Stop, Ricky. Didn't his friend, whatever his friend's name, Bumblebee, whatever his name was, told him, be confident, get your like player game or whatever you call it ready? No, Ricky just, oh God, it was bad. I was super uncomfortable. And I like Ricky and I would have been turned off. Well, let's fast forward a little bit through this very awkward dinner that Ricky didn't think was awkward. And Melissa leaves. The cut back and forth between what these two thought about the date was painful to watch. Melissa says it's complicated, we'll see, when producers ask her if she's attracted to Ricky. Well, that's not good. Complicated is never good. And we'll see is a for sure no. However, Ricky is, he is head over heels. He thinks he freaking nailed it. He actually said, I think I won her over. And he's more in love than ever. He can't wait to plan the next few days together and start planning their future. Well, that future is going to be very short because it's clear that Melissa is not interested at all. Dave piped in watching this and was like, okay, she was definitely on another date before that. I didn't even think that. I thought maybe like her friends were psyching her up to go, but I am thinking now she was on another date. I know people on Twitter are saying this is perhaps her job, meaning she is a sex worker or a prostitute or something. I don't necessarily believe that, but I do know that she is not as interested in Ricky as Ricky is with her. Okay, let's go on to Darcy and Jesse. God damn it, this guy is a fucking psychopath. I just had to say that right off the bat. They're in Central Park, and he's walking around like such a douche, and he's looking around as if like a fashion photographer is hiding in the trees or something and taking a picture of him. He's doing that like half open mouth, looking around straight into the sun so that it's hitting his eyes and he's blinking just so. And he says, I don't feel like I'm in the city anymore. Okay, shut the fuck up. You're in Central Park in New York. Stop it. And stop it with the Hermes belt. He looked like freaking Yolanda Hadid hyphen Foster hyphen Hadid. And with the highlights in his hair, if you are going to call yourself a model and put yourself on my TV screen on my favorite show, you better get your highlights touched up before you go on camera. I saw those highlights grown out on the back of his head, and it made me super angry. No one should have highlights grown out that badly except me because I go, you know, like twice a year because that shit's expensive. But Jesse, pull it together. If you're wearing an Hermes belt, you should have your hair up to par. Darcy definitely spent some time on her look that morning because she is done up way beyond what she should be doing up. Like Jesse said, only some people are cut out for makeup, right? I mean, she looks great, don't get me wrong, but it's just a lot, right? Too much of the eyebrows and the makeup and the pulling the hair back tight, way too much. She also says something very interesting and something that I'm starting to not feel bad for her anymore about. And she says that they're breaking up and making up every other day. Well, Jesus Christ, Darcy, if you're breaking up and making up every other day and you're not even in the same place, that's not a good sign. Once you get together with someone, it only gets worse. We all know that. That's the je ne sais quoi of marriage, right? It's not going to get better, honey. But instead, she's taking it as a sign from the universe that she is hearing a wedding march on the bridge. You know, it has nothing to do at all with the group of producers, cameramen, sound guys, giving the guy money to play the wedding march on the bridge. If she's really listening to the universe, she would have realized two things that stood out to me on that bridge. Number one, her purse almost falls over the bridge into the water. Well, there's your sign, right? And the other thing is, that bridge looked awfully familiar to the bridge wherever Mauricio and Kyle from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills put their little lock. And I'm pretty sure that thing fell down into the river or they had to take all the locks off or something. You guys probably know better than I do because I'm not very internationally smartly inclined. See, exactly. I don't even know what I'm saying or what I'm trying to say. Now, then they go and they sit in this motherfucking foxhole. I don't know what the hell was going on. Why, if you're wearing white jeans, because I'm pretty sure one of them was, or something inappropriate to be sitting in the dirt, would you climb down and be sitting lakeside, creekside, whatever the hell that was? I'm sure it smells. I don't care if it's a sacred area or whatever. There's dirty things there, okay? At least find a rock or something to sit on. But no, these two assholes find the stupidest place to pose like they're a happy couple. Again, with the little sun shining down on them, and Darcy's looking over like, with the slightly parted lips and the eyes. They're just such assholes. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. I'm looking at the clock here. We're like a half hour in, and we're not even like a third of the way into the show. Okay, Jody, keep it moving. Next morning, they're laying in bed. It's Darcy's birthday, and Jesse leans over and says, "Good morning. Happy birthday, baby. How does it feel? 43. Okay, well, now not only is he a soon-to-be farter, but he also calls her 43, as if she perhaps is 40 trees years old, and there's many rings in the trees, so she's really old. He definitely wants her to know how old she is what I'm trying to say. And then Darcy, with a full fucking face of makeup, is called a natural beauty by Jesse. bullshit. And then the moment we've all been waiting for since we saw his apartment all ablaze last season, she calls him her love and her twin flame. Well, now it all makes sense why they always have to have fires everywhere. He's fire guy. Yes, another Office reference for you. But I mean, seriously, what the fuck is with them and fire and flames? Now, another thing I have to notice, because this is how my brain works, is that Jesse is not toned at all. He's got a lot of moles and a lot of skin tags. I'm not saying that's necessarily something he can help, but if he is priding himself so greatly on this personal trainer thing, remember last week when he said he can't be walking around with Darcy acting like this because he's a personal trainer? Well, if you're a personal trainer, you want your body to look good. Get some of those skin tags and those moles removed or at least checked out. I don't think he goes to a dermatologist for a yearly check. I'm just saying, in a little PSA, everyone, get your skin cancer checks once a year. I know at least two people that are in their 30s that were diagnosed with cancer. Holy shit, I am all over the place. This is what intermittent fasting and caffeine does. Oh my God, how many people have tuned out at this point? Back to Jesse and Darcy, how crazy they are. You know, not like me at all. What I'm trying to say is that Jesse is not toned at all. For being a model and a personal trainer, he just looked like an average guy. He doesn't look terrible, but he definitely doesn't look ripped like I would imagine a personal trainer would be looking like, or at least working towards. Well, today is a big day, not only because it's Darcy's birthday, but it's the day where Jesse is finally going to meet Darcy's daughters. The plan is that Jesse's going to wait inside while Darcy goes outside and retrieves her daughters from their Uber. So the daughters get there, and instantly Darcy takes it to a 10. She starts squealing in like dog whistle territory. It was very Teresa Jewadice. Like, which one did it first? Which one does it better or worst? I don't know. But it was a lot of squealing. My kids would freaking kill me if I did that. So she brings her daughters in. They meet Jesse. Super awkward. I think Jesse was so overconfident, and he's such a sociopath, that he had zero plan what he was going to say to them when they came in. And he quickly realized he ran out of things to say because he didn't even try to plan anything. And the daughters are not impressed. Okay, I don't know if I like them or not. They're Darcy's daughters, so I'm a little skeptical. But I think they may have a better head on their shoulders than Darcy does. Because when producers ask the girls if they like Jesse, they're like, well, he's a millennial like us. I don't know, like a stepdad. And then one of them says something really interesting, and it's that her mom always likes serious relationships, and she just wishes that she would take it slow. That is straight out of Molly and Olivia's playbook from Before the 90 Days, where the daughter is looking at the mom like, what the hell are you doing? Take it slow. You're jumping in way too quickly. You're not seeing what everyone else is seeing. Well, what everyone else saw was the four of them on that ferry. Darcy was trying to make it seem like they were one big happy family, and they did look like one big happy family. It looked like mom and her college-age son and her high school daughters were all meeting up for a day out. Like, maybe they're going to go meet dad for lunch because he's a big stockbroker and they're going to meet him in the big city. It definitely had the vibe of 20-something son meeting up with his sisters and his mom. Did not look like mom and stepdad and daughter's family day out. Okay, let's move on to Paul and Karini. We pick up where we left off with Paul asking Karini to take a pregnancy test, and she storms off because she's so upset. I will say it again this week, I don't believe this for a second. I think these two have their storyline planned out. It's all mapped out. They know what they're going to say and what they're going to do. Because when she goes to take the pregnancy test at the hotel, it's so obvious that they are in on this together. Not only because you cheating on someone would have nothing to do with a pregnancy test, maybe an STD test, a lie detector test, but the pregnancy thing is just stupid. So she goes and takes the pregnancy test, and then she comes out and she says, "Oh, sorry." And she has this face like she's playing along with it, but it's awkward because I don't think she understood Paul's translation. Or maybe I shouldn't blame it on Paul. I'll blame it on Siri or the translator app, that she didn't get exactly what their scene was supposed to be about. Long story short, no, she's not pregnant. And then she says Paul is an insecure man and he has a pathetic attitude. Well, that I agree with. Now, Paul's response to this whole thing is that being cheated on so many times scares you and it scars you. Well, yeah, Paul, so does arson, right? But that didn't stop you. Now let's talk about this whole arson thing. Karini's parents are none too pleased about this criminal record. So they're going to go and talk to her parents about it, and they're going to have a translator come to help overcome all the obstacles that they have. Number one, let's talk about that obstacle. How about one of you buy the Rosetta Stone series and learn each other's language, for Christ's sake? But nonetheless, we have the translator there now, and the five of them sit down to go through all the paperwork. The translator explains that Paul committed arson and insurance fraud, and there's a charge from an ex-girlfriend. Paul looks up and is like, "I am open to any questions at this point." Well, the father wants to know, is there anything still ongoing? They explain, no, all these charges are from 10 years ago, 2008. And then Karini's mom, come to find out, has more questions than anyone. She wants to know about the ex-girlfriend. And I felt like this moment was very Kim Richards from Housewives of Beverly Hills when they're at the table with Lisa Rinna. And she's like, yeah, tell us about the husband. Tell us about the girlfriend. Just me? Okay. Well, Paul says that he was just trying to make amends with the ex-girlfriend, which is why he kept texting her. He agrees that he should have stopped. He shouldn't have done that. But he has never hurt an ex. He's never touched her. There was no domestic violence. But still, Karini's parents want to know, how are they going to have any assurance that their daughter is going to be safe with him? What's interesting here is what the translator translates. She doesn't look at Paul and say, how can they know that their daughter is going to be safe with you? You know what she said? People say it's not safe to be with you, Paul. What do you have to offer? Well, thank you, translator Anna. I am not a big fan of doing interviews with people because, I'll be honest, I like to talk shit about people here. I don't want to have to be kissing their ass later. But I gotta tell you, I would be willing to make an exception, especially because I kind of want to ask her, did Paul and Karini ever ask you to help them with after-hours translating activity, if you know what I mean? I just think Anna has seen and heard a lot. But let's hear from Karini's parents because I really love those people. Her father really has kind eyes, that Jose. I mean, I want a hug from him. But in the end, her parents approve. They give their consent for them to get married, and they're at least content in knowing that Karini is going to be safe with Paul. Okay, moving on to our last couple, Tark and Hazel. If you remember, Tark is flying all the way to the Philippines to meet his 25-year-old, hopefully soon-to-be fiance. However, he's got 5 connecting flights before he can get there. That right there is going to rule me out of ever going to the Philippines. If there's not a direct flight or maybe one layover. No way am I going. It ended up being a horrible thing for Tariq because he has gotten stopped in Bangkok, the same place where he met his ex. We know that's going to be important because the airline didn't confirm his flight or they lost his ticket, something like that. So now he's got to wait 11 hours in the airport. That is a long layover, and it's even longer for Tariq because all he can think about is Hazel. He thinks she's going to make a great wife and a great stepmom. That is what Dennis Quaid thought in The Parent Trap, and look at how that turned out. Well, let's talk about Hazel. Let's meet her, shall we? We get one of those 48 hours or 24 hours before, and we get to meet Hazel's hair. Oh, I'm sorry. We meet Hazel. Now, she is pretty. She has a lot of hair, and maybe that's just where my eyes go. I was very distracted by the hair. It's pretty, but it is far too long for me. As soon as I see hair hitting the butt, I get grossed out because you guys know me. You know where my brain's going to go. I'm not even going to say it. You got to give it to Hazel, though, for her honesty. Maybe we call it sincerity. It sounds a little bit more gentle. Because Hazel says she really was looking more for the opportunity of an American man than for love. Although I don't know if I blame her. I mean, I'm trying to put myself in her shoes. And yes, from the outside, she's definitely talking about getting to America and money more than she's talking about love. But if you are working 10 hours, you're poor, you don't have custody of your son because you don't make enough money, wouldn't you yourself just do whatever it took to make a better life for yourself and your son? Just putting that out there that I do have a heart deep down inside. Well, it looks like Hazel lives with her sister, and her sister is one funny chick because when Hazel comes out wearing this dress, she says, "Oh, you look sexy, bitch." It was just a great moment. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And her sister's name is something like Jake, but I'm guessing you maybe say it like Jacque, which is very close to Jackie, Jacque. You feeling me here? Well, the two of them sit down and are talking about how she's excited to see Tariq and meet him. And then she gets a text. And it's Tariq saying that he's stuck in Bangkok. And she instantly, I mean, her face falls. She really is afraid that he's in Bangkok to see her ex and that her opportunity to leave the Philippines is going to be dashed if he gets back together with her. But finally, Tariq gets to Manila. Tariq. I'm going to keep going back and forth. Let's just go with it. He gets to Manila, and I thought it was really sweet. Hazel's friends or family have this sign, and they're welcoming Tariq, although she's very shy. At first, I thought it was really sweet of him to keep complimenting her and telling her that she's gorgeous and she's pretty. But then it just got really weird. He just kept saying it too much and staring at her too much. The body language of her in the car, she was about to jump out the window, much like Azin does with Nicole. She's clearly not comfortable with all of the attention that he's giving her. Now we find out a little bit why, and that's because she's not as attracted to him. Much like many of these people from other countries, they describe their American partners as chubbier than they expected. I don't even think he's that chubby. I think he's just a normal American, but there's my bias. I'm a little chubby too. So I think he's a good-looking guy. I think she's just very cautious at this point. And you can't blame her because when they get to that condo and there's only one bed there, I feel bad for her here too. Because Tariq, I don't know if I would believe him or not. I want to believe him that he thought there were two beds, but that little voice in the back of my head is like, was he planning to say, I thought there were two beds and he knew that there was only one? He offered to sleep on the couch. That was very sweet. But then they came up with the ultimate solution. And it's the solution that Dave and I figured out too. It's what I call my pillow fortress, and it just keeps you both comfortable. It's not so much about not touching each other like Tariq and Hazel, but for me, it's comfort. Little tip for ya, two body pillows, one on each side. I mean, the middle one, it's shared property. If he wants to swing a leg over there, cuddle it too, he's more than welcome. But this is my comfort zone. My pillow fortress is my land. It's my kingdom. He's got his kingdom over there. So I totally understand the pillow fortress. You know, maybe even someday after they perhaps make love or make whatever it is that they're going to call it before they actually fall in love, even though Tark thinks he's in love, maybe it stays there. Maybe it becomes their little ongoing joke. Remember when I was afraid of you and I sticked this up? Oh, the good old days of falling in love, am I right? Okay, well, previews for next week look, I hate the phrase bananas, but it looks bananas. Hazel's family is like bleeding from their face, screaming prayers. Michael ends up telling Angela to put on makeup to make herself look younger. And Karini wants to make a baby with Paul, but his mommy doesn't want to share him. Yeah, this is going to be fan-frickin-tastic. All right, let's take a quick break, and up next, TLC's Unexpected. Another week of Unexpected and another couple. We have a new set of teenage parents, Laura and Tyler. They're from Indianapolis, started dating in high school, and when they started having sex, you know, they're very fiscally responsible, much like Moneybags Max, and they didn't want to waste their money on those silly condoms or birth control. So they just decided, we'll wing it. And what do you know, totally weird, she gets pregnant. What the hell? So strange. Well, she actually found out at work where she did a pregnancy test, and she FaceTimed Tyler, and then, oh my God, they started talking like, okay, well, I guess we should, like, talk to our parents next, and they were, like, so disappointed. It was so strange and weird. Yeah, right off the bat, I had major concerns about this couple. They are finding everything way too funny, and they're taking everything way too lightly. The fact that when you're talking to each other and you're laughing and giggling about being pregnant, I mean, I remember feeling like, holy shit, I'm pregnant, what am I gonna do? When I was planning on getting pregnant, when I was married, had my master's degree, a home, and all that. I can't even imagine just taking things so lightly and thinking it's funny. Now, her parents, I feel badly for because they seem like really normal, good people. They are super level-headed. I appreciated them having the conversation with Tyler and Lauren. What are you going to do about insurance? And how are you going to pay for this kid? But the two of them, again, they have these permanent smiles on their face. I'm hoping it's just nerves in front of a camera, but I don't know. They think it's funny that, oh, they'll just be living paycheck to paycheck. It's not a big deal. And Lauren's got it figured out. She knows that single moms get tons of benefits. They'll just do that. And you know what? This is really funny. Hold on. You guys want to pull over if you're driving the car because this is so freaking funny. Their plan is that if they can't pay their bills, then they can become a stripper. And then Tyler might have to shave his butt. I'm telling you, the immaturity on these kids is so alarming and scary, and I'm instantly feeling for her parents because I feel like everything is just going to fall directly on them because I don't think Lauren, even if she's physically ready, she's just emotionally not there at all. It is going to be a hard adjustment for her for sure. Okay, so they're totally clueless, and on top of all of that, Lauren finds out that she has this condition where she's got to be induced early. I didn't look into it, but let's just trust that she's going to be okay and the baby's going to be okay. The thing is that they haven't taken a childcare class. They're going to do that the day before she's induced. And it's her younger sister's birthday. This becomes an issue because Laura feels bad that it's taking away from her sister's day. Although she's not really even acknowledging that it's really not her sister's day anymore. It's more about her baby's birthday. I don't know how to explain it. It was just a very disconnected feeling that I was getting from Laura. Is it Laura? Lauren? I think it's Laura. Yeah, Laura. All right, so we'll find out what happens with these two. We leave it there. Her younger sister's a little upset because she's got to share her birthday, but I'm sorry. Boo-hoo, that's life. It's a birthday. Once you're a grown-up, they don't really matter anyway. You won't really even give a shit. So who is next? How about Lexis and Shaden? All right, these two are back together, but Lexis is too afraid to tell her mom, Kelsey. I don't blame her because Lexis is very young. Okay, I don't want to say immature. Perhaps she is, but she's just young. Young enough that she has to ask her mom if she can take her very own baby to spend the night at Shaden's. Remember, she is only 16, so she still has to ask her mom to do things. Lexis has this thing in her head about Shaden, and it's just as frustrating for me watching as it is for Lexis because, you know, I am now in this. Lexis thinks that she can just restart things, and that is so frustrating to me because you don't get to really restart anything in life. Perhaps when you're 16, you think you can, but you can't restart anything. You can say, let's do it again. Let's get back together again. Let's do this relationship again. But there really are no true restarts in life. And if you're going to start anything, according to Kelsey, they need to start with getting a job, bringing in money, paying their bills. Maybe Shaden can start pitching in, getting diapers and food for his kid instead of cigarettes. I mean, who can blame Kelsey? Thank God she's got her head on straight because no one else around these teenagers seems to. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm not going to say too much. Now let's fast forward to the next scene. And somehow I didn't remember or we never learned that Lexis doesn't even have her license. I cannot imagine just the simple logistics of how Kelsey has managed to get herself to and from work. She's taking care of her daughter. She's taking care of her granddaughter. On top of everything else, it is all on her. I don't blame her for being on Lexis's ass to get her priorities straight. The very first thing you should be doing before even talking to Shaden about going on dates and sleepovers is practicing driving and getting your freaking license. How else is Lexis going to do anything for her daughter? I mean, how do you care for her? I'm sure there's not public transportation just zooming down their suburban street. And just normal 16-year-olds, I don't know, what do they do? Like go to Claire's Boutique or, I don't know, wherever tweens hang out, Jamba Juice or places that have the little boba things in the smoothies. You know, instead of trying to get back together with Shaden and nitpick and criticize him about his zits, get your shit together and learn how to drive a car. Learn how to park, for Christ's sake. All right, let's go on to Emily and Diego. My opinion of Diego has not changed since last week. I was not falling for the little sweet guy act that we saw this week. No way. The fact that he was laying in bed ordering Emily around to go pick up some clothes, saying they need new clothes, and you know, it's just him. He's always been sarcastic. He just kind of floats and it's part of his charm. No, fuck your charm. No. You don't get to just throw that out there and that be your excuse for being an asshole. I don't care if you're a minor. I don't care if you're 15, 16. I don't care if you're fucking 5. If you're an asshole, you're an asshole. And yeah, it's your parents' fault. But now that you're older, pull your shit together. When he said that he didn't want to be called during class if Emily went into labor and that she would just be fine with her mom and her grandma to help her out. I wanted to look up his parents' number and give them a call and give them a piece of my mind. I could not believe that. And the more she tried to explain, and she wasn't being mean or snarky about it like I would have been. She was just saying like, you know, it's your daughter's birth. Don't you want to be there? He said, calm your nerves. You keep asking me the same questions. And then he said, we need to stop this right now because this is leading to the wrong direction. Yeah, well, you know what direction it's leading to? My foot up your fucking ass. This kid is the worst. Now, my sister Jill, if you're listening to this, please know if any of your daughters were to get with a guy like this, I swear to God, you would need to call the PD and have a, what's the be on the lookout, be a bolo for me because I will kill a son of a bitch. I know it's never going to happen with my kids because my kids will probably never go on dates. I'm not as cool as my sister. I'll be outside in front of the house screaming like an idiot, probably crying for them to never leave mommy. Yeah, I know. I'm a big sucker. But anyway, the whole point in saying this is this kid sucks. He's the worst. It's all his parents' fault. Even when he tries to explain himself later and says, it's Emily, you know, she said I need to step up or grow up and she's going to leave me. Well, I think that drives people away. So I don't know if it's going to work between her and I. Well, you know what, Diego, that shit clearly worked for mommy and daddy or whoever primarily brought you up, but you can't pull the wool over all of our watchers' eyes. We've watched TLC for a living. We know a real deadbeat teen dad when we see him. Now, fast forward to the air hockey scene, and he's saying the right things, but I'm not falling for it because he looks high. I don't know it for a fact, but he looked high or he's highly confused. And again, you know, I have to comment on the roller rink. I hate roller rinks. I was cheering him on so loud to fall. In this rink, I mean, the fact that he even brought the mother of his daughter to be there, this place was the deadliest roller rink I've ever seen. There's bounce houses on the rink. How do you even have a bounce house in a roller rink with insurance these days? Can you even imagine? Bounce houses are dangerous enough, and now you put it on a solid wood, no cushioning kind of landing floor. Yeah, that's not good. Maybe Diego went there as a child. He fell out too many times, and this is what happened. Okay, moving on to Michaela and Kaylin. Yes, Kaylin, we finally see him. Remember, they are on again, off again quite a bit. He is living with Michaela and her grandparents and the baby. And with Michaela moving to Shannon's house, he doesn't want to move in with her over there. I don't blame him. But he also doesn't want Michaela to move there because he doesn't think it's good for Michaela. Now, Michaela could have had some good reasons to back up her decision to move in with Shannon, but I didn't hear them. I totally lost them because my concentration was all over the place. All I could see were her giant man hands, Seinfeld style, snapping some sort of crab or sea creature. I don't know. I'm from the Midwest. It was something that doesn't have legs like cows, but she was cracking and snapping into that shit. She could not get enough. Now, Kaylin was either eating the chicken tenders with fries appetizer or the Little Mikey's chicken tender special. You know, I looked it up. Place looks like quite a bargain, I gotta tell you. It was only $19.99 for those big leg tentacle things, whatever Michaela was eating. Now, Kaylin, I really do like this kid. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. I think he has moments like all teenagers do, but he seems to be Michaela's voice of reason because he's saying, you know, isn't it weird that your mom is charging you to live with her in the basement? But Michaela is not seeing that. She is just got it in her mind that she's going to rebuild this relationship. It's going to be like this little fairy tale mom and daughter together again. However, even with saying that, when Michaela had a little couch time with Shannon with the cameras, she looks at the cameras and she says, do I wish Kaylin and I could live together? Yes. Is there anything I can do to change that? No. And then Shannon's sitting next to her and Shannon looks over at her and Shannon knows what she's doing. She is trying to drive a wedge between Michaela and Kaylin so that Michaela will become closer to her. That is so freaking selfish. They have a kid together. They have some sort of love or relationship or understanding with one another. Why get in between that? It's so messed up. You guys know I'm not a fan of Shannon. I may be seeing things that aren't there, but I'm seeing something very unsavory. Now, I also saw two scrunchies on Michaela's hand, and I didn't like that. I don't enjoy a scrunchie. I wonder why she had two, because she had one around her bun and one around her wrist. I mean, unless she's going to go for like a Princess Leia double bun thing later, I don't understand the two scrunchies. I'm anti-scrunchie. I know the fanny pack is coming back, but please say no to the scrunchies. Now let's talk about this packing and moving thing because this becomes a very big conflict. Long story short, Michaela asked Kaylin to help her pack up and move out of Grandpa and Grandma's house. And Kaylin said he would, that he would help her tomorrow because he's going out to get a haircut and he's going out with his friends. And she said, okay. And then he left. But now we see Michaela wants to pack up now. So she wants Kaylin to come back to the house to help her pack up. And then she tells, she tells Grandpa Tim, well, Kaylin's not coming back because he doesn't want to help me pack up. He's not going to come today. And then Tim is like, well, I don't like that. You know, he's just not going to help her. And no, that's not what happened. Michaela is manipulating people in situations to make herself, I don't know, the victim or to make herself look helpless. I'm not quite sure what the motivation is or if that's just her default, but that's not the whole story. Kaylin is going to help you move. He said he was going to help you move. You said, okay. He said he will help you move tomorrow. But then when you go to other people and you're changing the story, you're changing their opinion of Kaylin, and that's not really fair. I wonder if Michaela would want Kaylin to go back to his parents, his mom, or his grandparents and say, oh, Michaela was gonna move in with me, but now she's moving in with Shannon, or, you know, change the story around a little bit. I have a feeling this is where a lot of this breakup and makeup stuff happens. Michaela's okay with something, or she changes her mind about something quickly and she wants everyone to adjust to it. And when they're not willing to, she shuts down and pushes people away. That's just, you know, I don't know her. This is just a theory of mine. Well, Michaela is then at her grandma's house or her great-grandma's house. And this scene really got me. We don't see Michaela blowing up Kaylin's phones with text, but we know that she did it because Kaylin calls Michaela directly and says, okay, what's going on? You're blowing up my phone. And then Michaela says, well, what do you mean? And she's got him on speakerphone in front of her great-grandma. Number one, I'm not a big fan of that. However, I know that she's in front of cameras. They might need to do that. But number two, don't act like you're all naive. Like, oh, what do you mean? I wasn't blowing up your phone with text when you clearly were. That's the whole reason that he called you. So Kaylin says, yeah, you're blowing up my phone and you're being mean. You're saying mean shit. You're trying to pick a fight. All I wanted to do was go get my hair cut. I said I was going to help you pack up tomorrow. I need a haircut. My hair looks like I'm fucking homeless. I'm saying that quote because number one, I agree with him. And I was actually going to make a comment about his hair looking much better when it was short. But number two, that word fucking really aggravated her grandma because her grandma pipes up and says, tell him to watch his mouth. No. Great grandma should have kept her mouth quiet. It is not her place to be piping in the conversation. If she didn't like that he swore or cursed, well, then say something to Michaela afterwards. But you jumping in the middle of their conversation, that is not your place. And Michaela certainly should not have said to Kaylin, oh, that's my great grandma. She doesn't want you to swear. She told you to watch your mouth. No. If you want to be treated like a grown-up, Michaela, then you need to act like one, and you can't be bringing in grandma and mom and great-grandma in to fight your battles for you. It doesn't go both ways. You can't have it both ways. And maybe I need to just clarify my feelings on Michaela. I think she's probably a very nice girl. I'm sure she's a good mom. But from their interactions that I'm seeing, I see how Michaela is with her grandparents, okay? She has a tendency with them to pick little, they're not fights, kind of like making digs at her grandma or at her grandpa, and then she plays kind of cutesy. You know, I see her do that during their little couch scenes. I think she picks fights with Kaylin because as soon as she feels like she doesn't have full control of him or a situation, she sabotages it to kind of exert her control. And that would make sense based on her childhood, right? So although it may happen subconsciously, she still has to get that shit in order once you have a kid of your own and you're saying that you want to get married and be treated like an adult. Like I said, I like Michaela, I think, but I think she just needs to find a good therapist, and that's not a dig. Everyone needs a good therapist, right? All right. Well, next up, let's talk to some other folks who have a few therapists to root them on, to cheer them on into making horrible decisions in their life. And that would be Married at First Sight. Well, here we are, day 20 of being Married at First Sight. And I got to tell you, Dr. Pepper is looking better than ever. Her Botox is on point. Her eyes are sparkling. Love my Dr. Pepper. Now we're going to start with Bobby and Danielle this week. Bobby starting off waking up in the morning, and he says every day he wakes up, first thing, lets the dogs out. Well, you know I hated him before, but now I really hate Bobby because I've been getting puppy fever and wanting to get a dog, and now Bobby has ruined it. Just him saying every day, let the dogs out, made me realize I would be singing Who Let the Dogs Out every goddamn day if I got a dog. So now my little dream has been dashed by a boy-haired man boy who slices up apples rotting from the inside out for his new wife. Don't think I didn't see that apple with that rotten core he was stabbing into like he stabbed something else before. Now, Danielle, on the other hand, is just loving this because while she's straightening her hair, Bobby's able to get that green and white striped polo shirt washed and ironed again, and he's making your lunch. I can't tell you how much I hate that green and white striped shirt. It is the star-spangled boxers of this season. More on Bobby and Danielle in a little bit, but we're going to jump to Mia and Tristan because guess what? Pastor Cal is visiting, and this means that Mia has to hunch her shoulders over and play all coy and shy. I am telling you, this chick's body language alone, it tells anyone with three brain cells that she's hiding something and she's not being totally open and honest. And I also didn't like how she was basically sitting on Tristan's lap on that sectional sofa. Scoot over. Everyone knows the first one to get to that corner cushion seat owns it. Finders keepers, find somewhere else on the couch to sit. Now she wasn't really around too long anyway because Cal tells her to scurry off so he can talk to Tristan about trust. And Tristan admits that he feels this little cloud of mistrust over him. But Cal, you know, he's always got some wise words for you. Pull out a little pencil and paper if you need some advice. If you are just here for shits and giggles, get ready. Pay careful attention to what Cal says here. I believe that trust is sort of like the companion to commitment. And if I'm committed to you, you'll believe that I'm in this thing because I'm consistently doing what I say I'm gonna do. No! Wait, okay, so let me get this right, Cal. Or may I call you Pastor? Okay, Pastor. So you're saying if I'm committed to someone, trust should go along with that? What? Whoa, this is news. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ. Can you even believe he's saying this shit? Like it's news? Okay, moving on, or perhaps moving altogether. Tristan's lease is up, so he's talking about how he might want to move to Houston. And Mia, well, what do you think about it? Well, she considers Tristan as home. Home is wherever Tristan is, so she's going to follow him wherever he may go. I mean, it is way too much. She's full of shit. Now let's go to boys' night, and then we're going to continue on with Amber and Dave and some more about Bobby and Danielle. Now this boys' night, they're hanging out this very nondescript Mexican place, and it totally bummed me out because I didn't get to see what the name of the restaurant was, and it's like Lifetime has got their pulse on me or the pulse on me. They don't want me knowing where they're eating out anymore, and I'm really kind of annoyed about it. But just as Bobby is telling the guys, you know, he and Danielle, they've got it made. They never fight. He loves this shit. He loves being married. Pastor comes around the corner and the guys all bro it up for him. They're like, oh, bro, oh, there he is. Oh. and seeing Cal in jeans and a buttoned-up shirt with the buttons undone, it was like running into, you know, your teacher outside of school or running into your boss with their wife and kids or their husband and kids. It's like, no, no, no. Worlds cannot collide. Something is going on here that should not be happening. Now, I beg of you, the next time you watch Married at First Sight, please listen carefully to the words coming out of Cal's mouth, because just a few seconds ago, I was reading you a direct quote that was just straight common sense. It gets even more dumbed down. It's ridiculous. So in his voiceover, he's saying he's meeting with the guys to talk because, quote, in theory, getting married at first sight sounds easy, but it's not. It's very complicated. Well, no shit. No one thinks getting married at first sight sounds easy. That is the whole point of the show. That is why we are watching. I cannot believe he gets paid to just open his mouth and let words fall out. I do this podcast every week, the podcast that I'm trying to make sense of all this shit that they're saying, and I'm not making a dime today. What the fuck is going on? Well, then it got worse because Pastor Cal was wearing man bracelets, beaded ones, three of them. Like, fuck me, or fuck these guys, because Cal sets them up. He has them write down a rating for their wives on a scale of 1 to 10. I mean, if there is ever an oh, here go hell come moment, this is it. This is never going to be good, because if you rate your wife too high, that's going to scare the shit out of someone that early on in a relationship, right? And if you rate them too low, well, I mean, fuck you, asshole, you're screwed. Well, what does Bobby give Danielle? Shocking to no one, a 10, because, you know, Bobby finally got to see boobs. Of course, he's going to give her a 10. Dave gave Amber a 7.5 because Amber is constantly stressed out and needs constant reassurance from Dave. I totally get that. He's starting to get tired of it and he thinks it's annoying, and it is annoying. Now, at this point, I need to point out that we go to commercial. And I just got to ask you, what happened to the good old days when commercials were, remember Love Connection? Oh, be right back in 2 and 2. Well, those days are long gone because commercials are at least 4.5 minutes long now. You know how long 4.5 minutes is when I'm trying to listen to my kid talk about Forza Horizon 3 on Xbox, just waiting for my show to come back on so I can be like, oh, sorry, buddy. Mommy's got to get back to work. These commercials, we got to cut this shit out. All right, anyway, Dave comes back to describe Amber slacking on doing the dishes, that he already cooks. She says she's going to clean, but then she says she's too tired to do it. So that's why he's given her a 7.5. It's not that he necessarily minds doing it. It's just that he's afraid that this is going to be forever, that he's always going to have to be putting in the majority of the responsibility and the caretaking and telling her everything's okay. Seeds of resentment have been planted, and I think we all have been there. Once you have that resentment, it is damn near impossible to get rid of that. So what does Tristan give Mia? He gives her an 8. Yeah, the one with a criminal record has a higher ranking than Amber. Tristan says she has all the ingredients for being a 10, but she just hasn't put them all to use. Okay, well, Bobby's eyes are just like popping out of his head, like, holy shit, these guys are dealing with a lot of stuff that I don't have to. And he's just letting the dogs out, wearing his nice starched shirts, having sex, touching boobs. You know, he's just loving marriage. He also takes the things Cal says about love to heart, because if you noticed in Bobby's interview outside the restaurant, he's quoting Cal. And you can see he's looking down at something, which must have been his phone, where he took notes, because then his arm swings backwards and he tucks the phone into the back of his pleated Dockers. I don't know why this stood out to me. It's just, there's something about Bobby with him having no edge at all. You need to have a little edge or a little asshole to be, you know, attracted to a guy. Am I right? All right, now back at the ranch with Danielle and Bobby. Bobby cuddles into bed and tells Danielle that he rated her a 10, and then he describes how Cal described what love is, and although neither of them have said I love you, they hope to soon. And then Danielle makes Bobby dinner because they're a new couple, they think it's fun, and oh, it's so exciting. No, they just haven't settled into marriage. They don't understand the dinner struggle. I think we can all remember those days when it was fun, but now, no. Our happiest moments as a couple in our marriage right now are when we don't have to make dinner. I mean, when the kids forage a few Ruffles in the pantry or find a cereal bar and they don't ask for dinner, and then we independently of each other go and find some trail mix or maybe some frozen taquitos and heat them up for only ourselves. I mean, that is marriage. That is the finest moments there are. Now let's go on to Amber and Dave because they got a little messy this week. So messy, in fact, they needed to go furniture shopping for a dresser. Okay, didn't plan that. That was kind of lame. But so was dresser shopping. Now maybe they should have been shopping for an abacus because Amber just about pulls a Britney Spears and like shaves her extensions out of her head because she loses her mind when Dave tells her that he rated her a 7.5. She said she had a feeling that she was being a bad wife, and hearing this numerical rating score just confirmed it. And then she moped around the furniture store pretending to be quasi interested in some wicker balls while Dave was mumbling that, okay, I'll give you an 8 if it'll make you happy. Oh God, it was so sad, but so satisfying to watch. Now, hours later, Amber is still obsessing and perseverating on this rating. She cannot get over it, although I have to admit, I get it. But you can't be annoying about it. You just gotta take a breath. And then if I were her in that moment, if she were to call me as a friend, I'd be like, you know what? You gotta knock that shit off. Just knock this wife shit out of the park so that you can say, I told you so, you know, just like a mature woman does, right? Don't keep boo-hooing and nagging about it because that's just going to make it worse. Dave is not an idiot and he can see that Amber is upset about it. So he tries just explaining his rationale. And it's that at the beginning of their relationship, which, you know, is 19 days ago, he's just had to do more in the relationship than he expected. So Amber requests an example, and Dave promptly delivers. Married at First Sight producers, editors, whoever you are, you did Amber no favors. There was this epic flashback of Amber agreeing to do all the laundry in exchange for Dave doing dinner in the trash. Oh, ouch. Now, in Amber's defense, though, that turkey scramble he's making for dinner, I mean, that's not even considered food in my book. It's probably what made her cat claw the shit out of the bathroom the other night. So maybe this really is all his fault. But Amber has a moment of panic and self-preservation, as anyone would, and she says something like this, meaning taking on more than she really wants to do, is why she didn't want to get married in the first place. And once again, Dave has to calm her down and tell her what she wants and needs to hear. Even after Amber apologizes for that, this is where things are going south. Dave is still annoyed that she felt that way, even with the apology. But on the flip side of that, Amber does get validated because she does get to hear him say that he has feelings for her, which is really what she ultimately wants. She wants to hear Dave say how much he loves her and how much he cares about her. To me, it's just a really bad dynamic. It's a bad cycle. But Dave isn't necessarily honest in that moment, and this is where his flaw is. He only shares his frustration with the camera in his little interviews. He's not sharing that frustration with Amber. So her sense of insecurity is kind of sort of justified. You can see why she's feeling that way. And now, saying this out loud, now I'm even more confused like Amber is. Now, I just have to say about these two, both saying that they have feelings for each other If I were just watching them together, if I was on the street, even if I knew nothing about them, just watching the way they interact with each other, their body language, there doesn't seem to be any sort of spark or connection. I don't see it. I mean, I think Bobby is weird, and I think he's on the verge of snapping, but he and Danielle do have a connection of some sort. You can see it. But Dave and Amber, not so much. Maybe it's a physical attraction they have, but I don't think it goes any deeper than that. Okay, now let's go back to Tristan and Mia's place because shit started to go down. Tristan's buddy, Goober, or it was Gumball or something, called him and told him that he saw Mia on a dating app. I think it's Tinder, but I'm not a mill, so I could be wrong, but it's something with swiping. And Mia says that her profile was deactivated and she deleted the app, but Tristan doesn't believe her and he doesn't even care because he says he's done and he can't trust her anymore. I did ask some people on Twitter how Tinder works. If she deleted the app off her phone, would it automatically deactivate her or take her out of the system? And people are saying no. So at this point, ooh, you can hear my squeaky chair again. Gotta get that fixed, sorry. At this point, maybe Mia is telling the truth, right? Well, you know what? Don't worry. We have Dr. Jessica on the case. She's put on her makeup and she is ready to FaceTime so she can stare at her own reflection. Why we had to call Jessica in? Why can't we get Pepper? I would even take Pastor over her. Doesn't even matter to Jessica that Tristan and Mia's faces are not even in the frame because she's just staring at herself, her own reflection, in the bottom corner. I saw that shit. I know that game. I mean, there's a reason I know my nose is huge, and it is because of the invention of the forward-facing camera on laptops and cameras, right? Okay, well, anyway, Mia mumbles, and then she starts pulling her sleeves over her hands while she explains how she accidentally still had dating apps. Again, her body language is so telling. Well, Mia also tells Dr. Jessica that they had an explosive fight, and turns out, ooh, maybe she didn't delete the app, but it was an accident. Yeah, bullshit. Well, Tristan is so pissed off and so hurt that he's taken off his ring and he's realized finally that everything in this relationship has been about how needy Mia has been since her arrest, all about her. Thank you, Tristan. That is what I've been saying for the past 3 weeks and why I think I need to be a non-certified professional for this show. But instead, Jessica's there and she tells Tristan to put his ring back on and just keep suffering through it. So they're off to go bowling. Now, this Bowl and Barrel place actually looked fun and clean. Normally, I am anti-bowling for dates, but this place definitely got my stamp of approval. Tristan's jorts don't, nor do the I love yous that they're still saying at this point 3 weeks in, but I guess we'll just have to see how it all shakes out. Much like things shake out at Border Control. Heyo! Yeah, I had to do that one. Okay, well, it's at this point I get my second sign from the universe that I'm not ready for a dog, and that was the WAG app commercial. I really hope you caught it because it was something. It's this dog walking service or app that tells you where your dog took a shit, and Olivia Munn is the spokesperson. I didn't realize her career was heading for the shitter, but it turns out it literally is. You gotta see this commercial if you haven't seen it. Probably worth it to go to YouTube. It's unbelievable. Next week looks really intense, but the previews always look intense for Married at First Sight. I'm wondering if it's the same people who make the previews and the commercials for Shark Tank, because Shark Tank and Married at First Sight, their previews, scenes for next week always leave me speechless, but then you watch the episode and you're like, wait a second, what happened to all that crazy shit that was supposed to go down? But I'm a sucker and I just keep watching it anyway. Well, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Please remember to subscribe. Please leave a 5-star review on iTunes and talk to me, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Reality TV Pod. Remember, let me know if you are in the LA area next Friday. Patreon.com/Reality TV Pod. Support the podcast. Really, really, truly helps me out so much. Tell a friend, share the snark, and until next time, stay salty.